question, but this looks like another place for that.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's not old enough to be playing it, but he'll be fine. He can play four more years.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'd like to call the council meeting to order. We have an agenda that's circulated. I think we're going to have to make a change. We're going to have to reverse 3.1 and 3.2, as I don't see the representatives from the Skate Park Association here yet. Are there any additions, deletions that members of council would like to the agenda? Oh, well, I guess we can change it back again to 3.1.
Patience took a little while this morning.
Okay, so you've got the agenda as circulated. Are there any changes that you'd like to make to it? If not, I'd entertain a motion to approve it as circulated. Moved by Councilor Fisk and seconded by Councilor Fancy. All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you. Now I'd like to call on Dr. Gunn and Margot Walsh-Lehman to come and talk to us about the Skate Park Association. Please. Thank you.
Where do I stand? I don't really intend on doing a presentation. I just saw that on the agenda, but and it's kind of a last minute thing from my perspective, so that's why Ian Kent isn't here. I just texted him to let him know that I was here. but I do appreciate the opportunity to, especially with the progress that I've seen down the road, to thank all the people here that have helped. The outgoing council has been incredible on this project, and also Mayor Clark, and more recently Brad Router, and Jennifer Hewley Keating has been there with us for quite a while, and Richard has come on in the last year or so, I guess, and has really helped us as well. Bruce Inglis helped me in some of our fundraising efforts, and and everybody's been very supportive, so thank you. One point of business from our side, I think, is we were hoping to float out a potential name for the park. We want something that reflected the region and the history, and for something that's kind of new, I think, to this area, we wanted to blend it in, and we thought that the Mersey Skate Park would be appropriate. Really it.
Thank you. Are there any questions of Dr. Gunn about the park, or it's making great progress?
Shocking progress. You guys have a lot of tools.
Exactly. You take your shovel over
there. Let's say that in front of the media.
Are there any things you don't have down there? Thank you very much. It's been a great experience.
I'd just like to say thanks, because it's so great that we can provide venues that are no charge.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's one of the big driving points about this, is it's a no charge venue. Yeah. And it doesn't cost much to get a board and a helmet. Yeah. So thank you for that. There's lots of people that appreciate that.
Councilor Fancy.
Upton School now, I mean, before when you 4 years ago when you came here and you had a large group here that was into the skateboarding. How is the skateboarding population now in Queens? What do you see as?
I'm kind of always aware of them around, and I see them, you know, through work, and if you go and spend any time over at the site, you see them kind of floating through all the time. They're still here. The kids grow up and change, and so a lot of the guys that we had at the beginning of this have now finished high school. But skating is as big as it has ever been. The parks are popping up all around us, and I don't think this is going anywhere.
Okay, great. Yeah.
Councilor Fisk.
Dr. Gunn, do you foresee a lot of maybe in the future tournaments in different categories?
Yeah, I mean, there would be no reason why we couldn't have competitions here. Our park, for the typical skate park competitions, which are in the bowls, we're going to have maybe the best one in the province. So So I don't, if they want to, if we want to have contests, we can have contests. Yeah.
Thank you.
Councilor McLeod.
In addition to skateboarding use of that place, it'll also be used for bikes?
The bikes are going to love it.
Yeah.
The bowl is, once again, probably the
designed
best one.
Designed for that?
It's big. It's a big
yeah.
bowl, and that's what the bikes like. The scooter kids will swarm it. Scootering is going up to Chester just this last week. Scooter is easier to learn. The learning curve is not as difficult as the skateboards.
Mm-hmm.
So you do see a lot of kids on scooters,
mm-hmm.
and they can start at a much younger age. So there'll probably be a bunch of scooters in there. And they'll be
and maybe graduate to skateboard somehow.
Yeah, you know, the skateboarding is the hardest one. And so it, even though maybe not the first thing that passes your mind, when you see kids on skateboards,
mm-hmm.
those are the real hard work and diligent ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it takes a lot of commitment to learn it.
I've seen more visible skaters around the area too, just though playing, trying out that sport.
Yeah, there's quite a few around. We've had good turnouts to the planning meetings that we had in the park. They're still here.
Just one more question, Dr. Gunn. When it comes to safety with helmets, is that going to be policed quite closely?
So there should be, as part of this design, we've always had a sign with the list of the park rules. It's well established with the other parks. There's tons of literature online as to what should be on there, and when it comes to your insurance, you know, it's how the insurance policies are set up.
Okay.
And so the hours of usage, helmet use, language, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's all just posted up there. The way that every other park I've seen like this works is you are to have a helmet on if you're in the park, and if local law enforcement finds you without a helmet, you're out of the park. And so in these parts, you know, we always presented this as a means of encouraging the kids to wear the helmets, because it's still not part of the culture. It's not part of skate culture to wear a helmet. If they enforce it, for kids around here, it could be the difference between being able to use the park or not. So
okay.
That's the way I kind of envisioned it.
Thank you.
Great. Dr. Gunn, thank you very much indeed.
Oh, there was a question.
It's
sorry.
Do you have one?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't know I was my last question. I was just wondering if the equipment, the safety equipment, was going to be available through the AmeriPark for people to.
Yeah, our association hasn't had anything to do with that. When we first started, through some fundraising, we bought something like 40 helmets that were distributed amongst the community, and they're still floating around. But as of now, we don't have anything planned like that. Project for somebody.
So on behalf of council, I would like to thank you, Dr. Dunn, and Kent, and the whole organization. It seems a lifetime ago that we were, that we were faced with busloads of kids in a council meeting. And I remember as we passed the motion for our contribution, the great cheer that went up. We don't get many of those in council, and it sort of sticks with you when you get one. So that was great, and it's been a really good project all the way through, and I'm so pleased to see it come to fruition. And if the weather stays good, and it's going to, we'll get this thing done almost before this council is through its term. So that's excellent. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, the next.
Sorry. Don't intend on behaving especially well today, so.
The next item on the agenda is the presentation plants to plate. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm just going to get the projector
okay.
Here so you guys can see what we're talking about. So my name is Melanie, and this is Mary Lou, and we're both members of the Plant to Plate group that operates here in Liverpool. Sarah Newton, who's in the media box, is also a member of our group. Can everybody see this okay?
Do you want to turn out the light?
That switch right there by the door.
Sorry, Mary, do you want to just put that?
Just speak up a little louder, please. It's hard to hear back here.
Okay, I'll try. Just keep giving me a thumbs up if I need to go louder. So what we're here to talk about is who is Plant to Plate and what we've done so far. We're going to talk about what are edible landscapes, why we should be promoting edible landscapes in our community, how can edible landscapes help our community, and what we're asking and what we can offer. So Plant to Plate has been in existence since 2011. It's a group of community organizations and community members, and we're trying to increase access to food and to grow food in our community. What we've done since 2011 is we've developed many resources that are available in the community. Our biggest project is that we support the community garden, which is located at 108 College Street up near the Family Resource Center. We host at many different fairs, food fairs, harvest fairs. We've hosted presentations in the community to many different organizations. Mary offers mentoring sessions free of charge at the garden for any growers that are there. We've created and supported many partnerships throughout the community. We've hosted events such as nature walks, canning workshops. And again, our garden is our biggest project that we've done, and now our focus is on edible landscapes.
So one might ask, what exactly are edible landscapes? Do I need a farm in the middle of my neighborhood? You know, am I going to be looking at corn crops? No, you can, but what we're actually aiming to do is to try to incorporate edible things into the landscape of the community to make it more beautiful and also to improve food security, biodiversity, as far as crops go, and try to entice people to come to Queens County, as this will be a very good resource for people of all ages. So, and it's something that you can get together as a community and do. We can make contests, you know, to have people, you know, whose yard is better, who grew the best this, who grew the best that. Growing things and having edible urban landscapes is much more than just having the availability to go outside and pick an apple. And here in Liverpool, we are now in what's called Zone 6B, which is one of the best growing zones that there is. And we can grow just about anything possible, right up to figs, just about anything you can imagine, and I brought a few things here. So what I envision is for us to have the most biodiverse edible landscape in the country so that we can bring people together here, give them a place where they know that they can have no problem finding things to eat when they need to, and have some tasty things whenever they want to.
So oftentimes when you think of edible landscapes or growing food, you think of the rows of food going for endless miles. But edible landscapes can be quite beautiful. Up in the right-hand corner, you see a picture of two trees. One's a cherry tree, one's a magnolia tree. Can you tell the difference? Can you pick out which one is the cherry tree?
The one with the cherries on it?
Out of the flower,
carefully, you're out of order.
So the cherry tree is actually this tree up here, and you can see, as Bruce had pointed out, the cherry tree gives you beautiful environment throughout the season. So you'll go with the leaves and then go to the cherries.
And do they bloom at the same time all New Year?
I think Mary would be best to answer that one.
I can answer that. If you fly into Washington at the end of March, the cherries will be in bloom and the magnolias will be in bloom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they have a huge festival down there, actually, for their
cherry trees.
For cherry trees.
Yeah, certainly pretty.
Yeah. So, as Mary said, edible landscapes is about utilizing our existing areas, and as you can see, there are many towns that have already done this. These are pictures of some gardens that are just in the mix everywhere. So, in fact, globally, there's a significant portion of food that is consumed is grown in the cities, and there are many communities already supporting edible landscapes. And they include places like Vancouver, Ottawa, Hamilton, Toronto, Manitoba, Halifax, PEI, Berwick, Bridgewater, just to name a few. And actually, during the Depression and the two world wars, for example, citizens of Canadian cities produced millions of pounds of food, 115 million pounds in 1943 alone. And for the war effort and to alleviate poverty and hunger, food was grown in front yards, backyards, parks, churches, community gathering places like rec halls and vacant lots.
So, as you can see, there's a lot of benefits to them. That was just one example of a time in our history when there was a problem with food security. Where did people go so they didn't get hungry? To their own backyards. We can do it again. And there's more and more benefits. Like I said, a lot of people think, well, you know, we don't really need the food. Why would we do this? So some of the benefits of having this type of thing in our community is, number one, health. Gardening reduces stress. It improves your mood. It's a healthy exercise, you know, that everybody can enjoy, no matter what level of participation you may have. We can figure it out so you can garden, even if you are disabled. It gives you food safety and security. The food is much more nutritious than what you get at the superstore or at Sobeys. It provides food, physical exercise we talked about. People end up eating more fruit and vegetables. As far as the community goes, the safety of community neighbors increases because they know each other, they care for each other. It's like nourishing a plant. You nourish a community. The crime is reduced because people have all had a hand in taking care of this, so there's less crime. Gardens animate an area with activity. You can beautify your neighborhood. They increase property values. They increase green spaces. Environmentally, it retains and filters storm waters, reduces carbon dioxide levels, contributes to plant, animal, and insect biodiversity, shortens the travel distance between producers and consumers, so economically it's very good.
And just to give you an example of animating an area or making it more part of the community. So the community garden that's located up at 108 College Street, when we first started, we did have a few of the plants being eaten, you know, some of the shed being ripped apart, a few things here and there, some pumpkins were squashed. We started engaging the high school into the garden, and they've helped develop a lot of the things that are there. They've built a lot of the raised beds, the grape trellis. We don't have any issues anymore. There's a lot of people that are up and around that area all the time tending to the gardens. Every single one of the plots were utilized this year, and I think we had 30 plus families that were growing food in the community garden. So as we mentioned earlier, we did host a few conversations around the community, and we specifically targeted edible landscapes. And we asked the community, why would edible landscapes be important to you? And these are just some of the things that came back from the community of why it's important to them. So it connects the community, increases visibility, improves health, it supports neighbors. It gets us back to our roots. It's a basic form of food production. It supports economic development. It builds a sense of community pride. And there's a lot more from the list. I'm not going to read them all, but they are there if you guys want them. So edible landscapes directly supports our Queen's Attraction strategy, specifically the health and wellness pillar, and the actions number 3 and 5. And it's also supportive of many aspects of the regional municipal plan. So things like protecting natural beauty and the assets, developing green spaces, building connections between the natural environment and tourism industry, working with business, visual appeal, and promoting a healthy lifestyle for all our residents. So there's many reasons why it's important to our community.
Wow, that's a lot.
Thanks, Mary.
You're very welcome. So it also provides lots of opportunities for our community. And tourism is one big area that edible urban landscapes is now getting into. And it is drawing people. You know, now we have a thing called Agricultural Day, so people go around to the farms, you know, for the day and see what's going on and whatnot. We could do the same thing here. People actually go to these places to actually see this kind of stuff. And my vision is actually to eventually maybe make this the most biodiverse urban edible landscape in Canada so that people will want to come here from all over the place. So in Bridgewater, they have a green growing festival. And they have maps that are available. The festival can be created around harvesting cherry blossoms, dogwood festivals. You can get the whole community involved, and there's more opportunity for people. This will create jobs. People can create products from it. More people will want to stay in people's inns. There'll be you can have local products that are created here, signature products even. That maybe you can have in the restaurants where people will drive from Halifax and say, I've never eaten that, let's go try that. Here's some of it here, look. This is one of those Cusack berries from a Cusack dogwood. I made jam.
So the Japanese dogwoods that we've planted around town are actually edible. So the berries that grow on them can be picked and eaten, and then those berries can be made into, and Mary does have a sample of the jelly here, jam here for you guys to try if you wish. And there's a lot of other products as well that we can grow naturally that can be developed into additional resources for the community. And as Mayor mentioned, this is a picture from Washington, D.C. during their Cherry Blossom Festival. It brings lots of people in, and vegetable tourism is around everywhere. So what we're asking, why we're here today, so we're asking that the municipality consider shifting line items in existing landscaping budgets towards edible planting strategies for municipal public lands. So such as that all new landscaping will consist of 15% to 25% of edible plants. Skate park could be a prime example. They're going to be doing landscaping once that project is done. What if you had some plants there that the kids could eat as a snack once they're done skateboarding? We ask that any time that you're replacing dead, dying, or diseased trees, shrubs, and plants with food, that they're replaced with food-producing trees, shrubs, and plants, such as fruit trees, nut trees, maple trees, berry bushes, etc. Selecting native and non-invasive species over exotic foreign species that may require more maintenance and or horticultural inputs. We ask that you ensure that existing programs that offer trees or funding for tree planting to local residents and organizations provide or require food-producing tree species wherever possible. So, you know, those magnolias and cherry trees give you the same effect. That the region and community groups actively promote edible landscaping to private businesses, households, and other institutions, such as Mary mentioned, maybe challenging some local residents to contests on who can grow the most food in their front yard, or for a business to look at how they can incorporate edible plants into their landscape. We ask that you undertake an inventory of all the land that can be available for gardening. This could include a variety of sites from vacant lots to areas within municipal parks. Pine Grove might be a prime example. You know, you could have Blueberry Ravine in there as an attraction to that area. Many neighborhoods have unused or underutilized spaces. And depending on the location, such spaces might be excellent sites for community gardens. We do have the site that's up at 108 College Street, which is really great. But it would be even nicer to see something more central in town that more people could access. And by understanding where there is space available for gardening, municipalities can best utilize vacant space and enable residents to establish new community gardens. And so these are just a few examples of some of the things that could be done. There's lots of resources out there. We did bring some today. There's toolkits. There's draft policies, gives you examples of how to develop different policies. And there are many groups that are there to support you through this process, and our group is just one of them as well. So we, if you're looking at forming a group to move this forward, we'd certainly like to be a part of that as well. And like I said, we do have things for you guys to look at if you're interested. The edible landscape notes are there. There's some brochures that tell you what's available at the library and all of that.
It is the wave of the future. There are more and more and more places that are getting involved in this. If you look online, you can see the policies that have been drafted in Ottawa, how they deal with the problems, how they deal with the issues, how they move things forward, you know, why they move things forward, what it can do for the community, what they hope to get from it, back from it. It's massive.
Thank you. Are you ready for questions? Are you ready for questions? Questions? Councilor Fancy, then Deputy Mayor Norman. Councilor Fancy.
Okay. You knew I'd be speaking. I've been part of the community gardens, and they do a wonderful job. I mean, it's a wonderful job what's going on up there, but of course, I look at Liverpool as we're way behind, because there's other places that have, even Bridgewater, I think, but they have three set up there. And
they do have their community garden, and they have a tree program. So they, if you go on to their website, you can see where all of the edible plants are at within the community, and they have their bee pollinator project as well. So places that have been planted to support bees.
And all of the community places, a lot of them have picked up that and done something on their own actual land to incorporate the whole edible scheme.
And along with that, with the community garden we have here, they don't tell you what they do. I mean, they do marvelous work. And Mary's just a wealth of knowledge. She, I mean, she's, she'll even send you emails, say, you know, maybe you should look at this in your garden. Maybe you should add this to help you along. I mean, it isn't just you're up there and you're left alone. You plant and see and watch your plants die. So so they're a wealth of knowledge to help you along with. And I think also, too, is something else which I guess you guys didn't talk about is the how we can be able to incorporate this into the schools with and to be able to get the children involved, because they don't, a lot of them don't even know what plants, where they come from, and be able to educate them, and that maybe as a region we can help support what could be done there, that they could be selling plants off in the spring and such as that, that somehow we could all be part of that to be able to get more education around, too, of edible plants.
And with the schools, we have partnered with the schools quite a bit. So we've hosted the food fair, which some of you have been a part of, and that did introduce the children to some of our local producers. And the Parents of Wickwire group has continued that on with great success and still plan on doing that. We are working with the schools to look at how we can do just that, offer some, you know, edible plants to families. There are school gardens that do exist, so the middle school does have some raised beds. The high school does help out with the community garden. They have their own garden that's there. And the elementary school has some raised beds as well. And one of the teachers at the high school was wanting to look at developing a green host classroom. So we're trying to help support them through that. And that classroom would be utilized by all three schools located at the middle school, is the hope for the future.
Deputy Mayor Norman.
I support and believe in what you talk as a edible gardener or home gardener. It's a good idea about the skate park. You can ground cherries and high bush blueberries and all such things. The 6B, it's good to note that we have a tremendous growing season here in Queens. And greenhouses that you mentioned are so low cost nowadays, and it eliminates the predator problem. As you know, we're overwrought with deer and things. So I hope that this community of Queens does look after. I know in the West Queens area they do celebrate with the Queens County Exhibition every year. It seems smaller and smaller, the people with produce there. So we should celebrate food, and we should work together and educate people, because people can grow even container gardening. And it's just such a way to supplement an income and provide healthy, nutritious food. So
most of these things here that you
and I didn't know you could eat
one.
The
most of these were entered into the North Queens Fair.
Oh, good for you.
All of them won first place.
Good.
And what I told the girls, because there were, you know, I could see that things were dwindling down, so I'm new to the area. So I made a sort of a commitment with the girls up there that next year I would try to get together before they had that exhibition and have sort of a competition where, you know, us versus North Queens, you know, who can do the best preserves, right, from the gardens, and have sort of a pre-fair here in, you know, this area. And then the big problem is it took me 4 trips to Caledonia to get my products in, see them, and get them back. And I know why nobody's going to put anything in. So I suggested that we have somebody take care of that, put all of our products together some night, somebody take them all up together, all tagged and everything, you know, have a little competition, right?
I see, Mary, we're going to benefit from your existence.
Yeah. I can tell you the secret to Mary Lou's winning. And that is, she puts black rum in on the Councilor McClure.
I think when you're coming to the municipality and you're presenting your ideas, and I think they're wonderful, as you know, we've been involved in the Plant to Play project at the Bookhouse School for the food fair. But partnering, like we have a Queens Gardening Club,
yep.
You know, that you could partner with
we
and
have.
Get and help educate and get those groups, and then maybe they, in their masses, could have an interest in producing or, you know, organizing some kind of community gardens that are more visible to the public. Your garden is up on the top of College Street, so a lot of people, passerbys, don't even know exists.
Yeah.
But the municipality has all our beds, you know, very visible and huge, and could be incorporated into part of it being an edible rhubarb or whatever you might want to have that kind of grows year after year. And also working with the library on various workshops. The Queens Library, our Thomas Radall Library, would love to have some kind of presentation made to them through Open to the Public that you could organize through their partnerships well. So
we did, we have many partners within the community.
Yeah.
We did partner with the garden group, and they actually put in an edible bed at the library.
Mm-hmm.
So they, and they brought in some books that help support edible landscapes as well, but your other ideas are great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we also have brought with us a list of, Mary put together a list of edible plants, and there's hundreds of different plants that are on this list that you can choose from if you're looking at developing an edible landscape.
Yeah.
And there are some, you know, beautiful flowers as well that are edible that we don't even realize.
No, that's the thing. Like, again, everybody still thinks of it like, okay, I got to go and dig my potatoes from my front yard. But that's just not it. I mean, hostas taste lovely in a salad.
Day lilies.
Delicious. Squash blossoms, absolutely fantastic. There are hundreds of flowers here that you can put in. As a matter of fact, I haven't looked around the beds that much, but I assume if I got a list of them, that it would be a matter of only changing out a few things for something that looked the same. You know what I mean? And we should try to get things in there that regenerate themselves, you know, perennial things, so that perhaps we don't have to continue every year to put more and more plants in and dig them up and put more and more plants in and dig them up. We could use that resource of the labor and the money and everything to further the edible landscapes, right? So, and on that topic, we already have so many wild edibles in this area here that you hardly got to plant anything anymore.
So I had a couple of thoughts whilst you were talking. One was the Gorham School property that we know we want to use sometime, somehow. It's 4.5 acres. But there's no reason why in the interim, until we find a use for it, it couldn't be used as an adjunct to the College Street property or for plots, that kind of thing. There's a community garden in Port Medway attached to the Port Grocer, which is good. And the other thing that might be worth thinking about is the demonstration garden in the Annapolis Royal Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
There is a small garden which is experimental and shows you different techniques you can use and so on, and that might be an interesting project to move ahead with.
Well, something that I'd like to move ahead with eventually is we could do things that are kind of off the wall, but like I said, would be unique to this area and I think draw people. So we could have like a national herb tasting museum. You know, everybody goes to the wine tasting things, right? We could do a museum of herbs, you know, and people could come and try the different culinary herbs and the different medicinal herbs, see what they're all about and everything. I know people would come. We could have walks, we've already done it, through the woods and through the gardens and tell people what is edible, what is not edible, what is this, what is that, you know what I mean? We drew a lot of people for stuff like that as well. So again, a lot of things that would bring people to our actual area.
If you put Mary on a group, the trouble is going to be reining her in.
I noticed that. I think it's
yeah.
The black rum that does it.
Too many ideas.
Too many ideas.
Come to English.
I was in New Glasgow on Friday and ended up in an unusual place, which was the Burger King drive-thru.
Mm-hmm.
Burger King's not something I'm very familiar with. My daughter got some sort of I'll call it an ice cream product.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And on Sunday morning, I took the thing out of the car, this container,
it was still there,
and threw it in a sink full that I'd done dishes in so that it would clean and I could recycle the container. And when I drained the sink, that ice cream product was still in its form. It had sat, you know, this clump of stuff sat in, so it really undermines what's happened in the world that we would be at a point where we're suddenly wondering where what we are eating came from again.
Yeah.
So I think that it's a wonderful message to keep pounding out everywhere, and I hope that you keep finding more and more partners in it. I know that I was at a presentation where a chap from the United Church in Yarmouth spoke, and they had a big side lot that was, you know, scrub, and I forget what year they're in and how many people they have gardening in it. But and I do remember somebody a long time ago suggesting you could have fruit trees, say in Privateer Park, and of course, you know, the immediate then well, the kids will eat them. Well, okay.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily sound all that bad.
Yeah.
So the certainly the yours is a message, and Melanie's been here, I think, back to our last incarnation of council. It's getting louder, and the simplicity, I think, is starting to,
yeah.
And you know, Darlene talks, you know, you can plunk a high bush blueberry plant over by the skate park, and I'd go eat blueberries all day while the kids, somebody else's kids skateboard. So,
that's
you
right.
know, they're, you're not talking about complicated things. So.
Yeah. And from one of the gatherings as well, one of the conversations we had, we went through exactly that, because there's going to be a lot, well, there's going to be vandalism, there's going to be food around, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. And we went through during the meeting all of the, we can't do it because, but these are the reasons why we can, and this is how you can overcome, this is why you wouldn't have the vandalism, this is why. So that's in the notes as well, if you need it, you can have it at your disposal.
Actually, if you connect all the dots together, it makes perfect sense for a community, okay, because A, you can get the kids involved and keep vandalism down and get your crime rates down. B, you can get kids, families, and everybody else involved and get more physical exercise. You can get better food because I got to tell you, we have no biodiversity left. Monsanto has us by the whatever, tomatoes. And, you know, we can actually introduce people to actual food, because one of the problems with people not eating right is they don't know they're not eating right. You know, they think that this is the way everybody eats. This is the way the food is supposed to taste. If I go get a tomato from the superstore and eat it, I'd say I really don't like tomatoes. But that's not what a tomato tastes like. So if we could just put everything together, we'd have all our health, crime, recreation, we can education, huge in gardening, okay? Because how many beans can you put in this size of an area if you could plant them 1 inch apart, right? I mean, I can come up with every single subject that you teach, and I can show you how I can integrate it into our food. We've lost a whole generation of how to take care of ourselves. And if we don't get it back now, we're gonna lose all the information that it took hundreds of years to figure out. And one of the worst things we can do is grow all those big crops together. That's what's killing us all. You need actually to put a plant here, another plant here, to keep away those insects, you know, instead of just spraying everything, because everything gets, you know, it just never ends.
Councilor Fisk.
Just quickly, very good presentation to start with.
Thank you.
I've noticed in the last, say, 15, 20 years in Queens County, especially, the farmers and that used to put gardens in don't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Very low in numbers on gardens in Queens.
Yeah.
This is an initiative to go ahead in smaller quantities and make it great for the whole community. I think it's just great what you're doing.
Mary,
okay, last question.
You get me so excited, Mary. It's just like, wow. once the food is grown and so on, there's also an education about how to store food, how to, you know, preparation, that sort of thing, because a lot of it gets rotten because you're not really storing it properly or freezing it and really cooking it and doing things that, you know, for
yeah, we've done
to
some workshops on how to actually preserve food in different ways and stuff like that.
Yeah. Okay.
So, Mary did grow the tomatoes, if you want to try them, and all of the products are here for you to try during the break as well. So.
And these are Cusack berries, okay? They grow on those beautiful dogwood trees that we get. They are highly edible at the right time of year. If you'd like to try one, the thing to do is to split it open, make sure that you have a napkin or something, okay? And then sort of push the fruit out, it's sort of like a custard. And spit your seeds out.
Okay, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you. That brings me to item 4 on the agenda, the tabling of petitions. Are there any petitions to be tabled today? Going, gone. Item 5 is the item where we invite members of the public to ask questions, make comments, whatever. Mr. Robertson, you're ahead of the game. If you'd like to ask a question, make a comment, please identify yourself and give us your screen address.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It's Leon Robertson, Street in Liverpool. I was very impressed with the presentation that we just finished here. And provide some for the neighbors, and also, when I worked here, I was able to bring vegetables in for the staff, particularly Swiss chard and things like that that they liked. So, and since I moved into town in a smaller area, so I'm not too much into the gardening right at the moment, but very interested in looking at the community gardens in another year. So it's a very good presentation. What I wanted to mention, Mr. Mayor, is I was thinking, and I know perhaps for the new council that comes on, is a welcome wagon. I don't think we have one here for the region of Queens, and I know from my experience of moving around when I was with the bank and places like Yarmouth, through the Valley, Chinfield, Windsor, Caledonia, the city, and Halifax in particular, they had what they called a welcome wagon, which was a group that was set up. They came to your home when for new people moving into the area, and they would come with this big basket, and they would have different goodies for you and so on, and also also gift certificates for from the local merchants. And it was really nice. We really enjoyed it, and it made you welcome and feel part of the community. And this was done probably within the first month that you'd be there in the community. And my suggestion, Mr. Mayor, would be that perhaps this could be looked at by your staff in the Economic Development Department, and perhaps maybe they could also partner with the Chamber of Commerce, who are the business people in the area, and take a look at it and come up with a program. I don't think it would, not looking at it, costing a whole lot of money as far as the municipality is concerned, a bit of work on your staff, part of your staff. And if you can get the merchants involved, and if they have gift certificates and so on, those people will go there, and with their gift certificate, and they get introduced to the local merchant and so on, and it certainly could be a benefit for them and a lasting relationship for their business. So I just suggest, Mr. Mayor, that perhaps maybe that could be taken under advisement.
Thank you.
And you can take a look at something like that. I think you can find that it would certainly help. And it would certainly make new people, and we want new people coming to the area, moving here, and it would certainly introduce them to the town as a whole. And one other thing, Mr. Mayor, from reading the brochures with the election coming up and so on, and on all the brochures, each one of the early candidates have mentioned about seniors housing and seniors projects and so on. And my comment is, that I hope this will be, with the new council, will be made a priority, because I think it's something that we need. We just have a family this week that is moving away to Halifax, and I understand because, you know, not the proper accommodations here, and they have a family that history goes back a long ways. So let's try to stop that and make it a priority with your new council, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who'd like to speak or address council? Councilor Cox.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. I just wish to reiterate what the last speaker has just said in regard to the seniors' housing. I think it's a seriously missing part of our community, and we have to do something to bring people in, not chase people out, because we can't get it. I know that you have a lot of obstacles to get by the regulations and so forth of the provincial government, and I've talked to some of them, and they say, well, you're too small. And I say, well, we would soon grow if you put some roofs here for people to come and live under. So I hope that that will be a priority. As a person who attends council regularly and throws out suggestions and questions, I would like to thank council for your cooperation over the last 4 years. Those that are not reoffering, thank you for your service. Those that have been acclaimed, congratulations. And those who are being contested, I hope that you're successful. Having looked back over the number of years I've been attending council, this has been a very good council. You have been productive, and you have given good service to the community. So, I can't speak for other people, but thank you for your service, everyone, and look forward to what will come up in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. Just, yes, Mr. Dagley.
Thank you, Mayor Clark. David Dagley, 9 Meadowpond Lane, Liverpool. I think everyone's well aware that the Beach Boys concert at Queen's Place Mirror Center was a huge success, and a large economic generator in Queens County. At previous councils, there's been some discussion regarding the success of that concert. I'm wondering now that the dust has settled and the expenses are all paid, if council has a net revenue figure for that event to indicate the success to the residents and taxpayers in Queens.
We have, and correct me, Jennifer, if I'm wrong, the profit, if you can call it that, from that concert was about $18,000. The real profit, if one can again call it that, was the huge, huge crowd it brought into Queens. It was the start of the long weekend. We bounced from the Beach Boys into July the 1st and into the weekend. And I know that you couldn't find a place to put your head within 15 miles of Liverpool all during that time. So the economic spin-off to the community was significantly greater than the cold bottom line that we had $18,000 more in revenue than we had in expenses. So yes, it's been a huge generator. Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Mayor Clark, for that response.
Thank you. I'd like to come back, if I may, to something both Mr. Robertson and Mr. Cox said, and thank you, Mr. Cox, for your kind remarks. But thinking about seniors housing, we've been working on it for quite a while. We had meetings just within the last 3 weeks, Richard, to develop a strategy to move forward. We have meetings scheduled, and I don't want to seem presumptuous in front of Mr. Dagley, but we have meetings scheduled for early November to move that forward some more. I haven't briefed council yet, but on this latest opportunity, but we will do that. But it's we are working on it. There are some really positive signs, but we need to gather a lot more information on this particular initiative. But it is a priority, and it should remain a priority for the next council. I agree with you entirely, though I'm reaching a point at which it puts me into a conflict of interest if I start to preach about seniors housing itself. Okay, is there anybody else who'd like to address council? If not, thank you all very much.
May I say something?
Yes.
I'm not in a conflict of interest to preach about seniors housing. And one thing, not yet. Though I do have
you're
a mother, but she's still young at 80. Though, for some reason, and I don't know why, but when I talk to people in Queens, it is almost as if people think we haven't been working on that. And I try to make people understand how hard this council has worked to try to get senior housing, three steps, senior housing. We don't want people leaving. And it's not lack of us. It's in order to do that, you have to have permission from the provincial government. You want to do nursing home beds, provincial government. If you want to do assisted living or you need investment dollars. And I say to people, 60 years ago, people who made money from this community reinvested their money in this community. Today, people who have made money in this community, not all of them, but many of them invested in investments. They don't invest it back. And I've often said to some of these people who could very well afford 10 of them to build what they want, that that's what we have to start doing. We can't look at a developer to come here and sink in a few million dollars. As easily, and it's not easy, but Mayor Clark showed the effort before he was mayor to raise that money for that hospital. And this community built that hospital.
Here.
It might come to the point, if this community wants senior housing of the kind they want, then the people that want it and have the money, they're gonna need to put it where they want it and not in investments. And that's my personal opinion.
Thank you. Councilor McLeod.
May I just add to that, because you know, I've been involved in the senior housing groups and the Social Action Housing Coalition group, and we've discussed the need for, of course, senior housing in all communities, but we also look at, and Councillor Norman indicated, developers and that sort of thing. The municipality are putting in infrastructure, water and sewer services, which can be a real attraction to developers to be building. And if we had more of the Lloyd Dexters and folks like Lloyd who build senior housing on the affordable side of that, you know, and he doesn't have to have government approval. He just has to have, you know, the initiative and the infrastructure and the convenience of building where he can build and afford to build. And that also passes down to the tenants who want to have affordable housing. So we're all working together as partners, and we just have to continue to do that and continue to have the community support us as well. And we certainly don't want people to be moving away.
Thank you. Okay, I'm now moving further into the agenda. And I'm on item 6, which is the approval of the minutes of the meeting of September 27th. Is there anybody who's prepared to move the approval of those minutes? Deputy Mayor Norman, seconded by Councillor McLeod. Any discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All in favor? It's unanimous, and thank you. That brings us to item 7, a dangerous and unsightly premise on 144 Main Street, Liverpool. And he makes this motion. Councillor Inglis.
I so move that the Region of Queens Council declare the property located at 144 Main Street, Liverpool, Queens County, Nova Scotia, as dangerous and unsightly as defined in the Municipal Government Act of Nova Scotia, and that Region of Queens Council cause an order to be served upon the owners of the property located at 144 Main Street, Liverpool, Queens County, Nova Scotia, requiring that within 30 days of the date of service of the order, the following work be carried out. Number 1, secure premises, noted as screened porch. Number 2, eavestroughing to be cleaned and free of growth and maintained on a seasonal basis. Number 3, grass to be mowed or cut and tree branches trimmed on a seasonal basis. Number 4, hedge at front of property, brackets bordering the sidewalk, to be trimmed and maintained on a seasonal basis. Number 5, trim hedge at front entrance. And number 6, scrape and paint areas where paint is peeling. And that, if the owners fail to comply with the order, the administrator may cause the requirements of the order to be carried out and all expenses incurred by the Region of Queens Municipality become the responsibility of the owners.
Seconded by Councillor Fisk. Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning.
144 Main Street, Liverpool, Queens County, Nova Scotia. PID number 7002-6026 is a standard parcel of property located at the corner of Main and Reese Streets in Liverpool. This file became a dangerous and unsightly issue on and off since July of 2014. The property unfortunately suffered a formal foreclosure in 2014-15. With an attempt to be purchased back by the initial property owner, many telephone calls and emails to property owner known as Mortgage Opportunities, CO James Drage Investments, proved to be a challenge on several occasions. Work to be conducted was put on hold pending a grant process for renovations. These renovations have never transpired. Since 2014, a few items of concern were addressed on and off, such as the lawn, repairs to several broken windows, the hedge, cleaning of eaves troughing. Since then, the lawn, bushes, hedging, exterior painting, and eaves troughing have been a concern to many. The file requires immediate attention. This is my recommendation for council to gain a formal order to bring the offending property up to what is considered to be neighborhood standard. So here we have 144 Main Street. This is at the corner of Reese and Main Street in Liverpool and at the rear of a local business known as Oscar's. As you see, we have issues with the exterior paint basically on one side of the house. On the other side of the dwelling, there's some issues, but not as much of a concern as it is on this side. Of course, we require scraping and painting to match the color, of course. This is the rear of the dwelling. We have overgrown bushes. The building is secure, so that's not an issue. A lot of the broken windows have recently been covered up, not replaced, but we can look into that. You see the eavesdropping? We have growth. That was once cleaned out over the course of the last 2 to 3 years. We require cleaning again. This is the front entrance. As you see, we cannot see the front exterior door or walkway, and it's an eyesore. This is the side entrance. You see the porched in area. It is open. Although the dwelling is secure, the porch is open, so we'd like to secure that. And this is the overgrowth at the rear of Oscar's. It can be seen from Main Street. The bushes need to be trimmed. The grass has yet to be mowed at all this season. And again, there's a close-up of the exterior painting of the one side on Reese Street. This is an ongoing issue. The hedge, of course, bordering the sidewalk on Main Street. It was trimmed once this year. But again, it needs to be addressed, and it needs to be addressed on a seasonal basis. And that shows you how much of the sidewalk you can actually access because of the overgrowth of the hedging. And again, just another picture of the rear. There is one house at the rear of this dwelling, and this is what the neighbors get to see on a very regular basis. It's unsighted. And this just shows the initial foreclosure. Again, although Mortgage Opportunities still owns the property, it could very well be a foreclosure in the near future. And that's it.
Questions, comments? I mean, it's right on Main Street. It's an absolute disgrace, and it really sort of lets down the whole tone of the neighborhood. Any further discussion on the motion?
Question?
All in favor? It's unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next is the South Shore Wren quarterly report. There's no motion. Joe, do you want to come forward, please, to... Councillor English, you're a director, so you may want to pass it, comment as well.
Sure, I think Joe would agree. The report is there and is going to be a quarterly newsletter now, Joe. Is that not correct? That will give highlights going forward. And of course, the big thing about the Wren now is that, in its steering stage, it was heavily influenced by elected appointees, which will be now cleared out. And I assume, I don't know if other councils have ratified that yet.
No, I saw an email the other day from Warden Weber, who is the chair of the Liaison Oversight Committee, that said the objective had been to get the elected people off the board, get that approved by all of the councils before the election.
Right.
That it was clean and the new councils wouldn't have to nominate people to the board. That has not been achieved. And so it's going to be a matter for the new councils to deal with as they go through their nominating process.
Right.
And so on. But the goal is to get the elected people off the board and replace them with business people.
Right.
Jill, do you have any comments that you...
So really the reason for putting this on the agenda was just so that the public get access to the newsletter. It's going to be, as Bruce said, a quarterly thing that their current priorities are their economic strategy and also a tourism strategy, which they're working on. And so the economic strategy is going to the board on
October the 13th, so hopefully we'll soon see the result of that exercise. And they've also been doing a tourism study on the visitor information centres in the area, which was just really looking at best practices and sort of getting ideas on how others could sustainably manage their visitor centres going forward.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Councillor McLeod.
Jill, I know members on that board are generally business operators. Is there much representation from the retail sector? Like, I often think about small businesses and generating interest in people trying to start their own businesses.
Not that I'm aware of. I don't know if Councillor Inglis, who's been on the board, could comment on that. Are there any retailers represented on the board?
We often think about downtown development, downtown strategies and improvements, and if
they tend to be manufacturers or larger businesses like White Point.
Well, should there be a focus on the smaller industries like the
retail? We can certainly suggest that to them.
We will be looking, or when I say we, I mean Queens will be looking for a new business appointee to the board, and we could, you know, that can certainly be borne in mind as that opportunity arises.
Well, you know, with retail restructuring and redevelopment of downtown cores, that might be something to take a real serious look at.
Any other questions or comments? Our dues are about, what, $32,000 a year, Jennifer?
Yes.
For membership in the REN. Okay, thank you very much, Joe. Thank you. Anything under corporate services?
Yes, Mayor Clark. I'd just like to bring to our attention that this morning we had the opportunity to view three new emergency vehicles, fire trucks and a rescue vehicle from Greenfield, Port Midway, and Liverpool. Very up-to-date vehicles. For example, Liverpool has a nozzle at the top of their vehicle that holds 1,000 gallons of this vehicle, and it would shoot out 1,000 gallons of water per minute, which is empty the truck quickly. I'm very pleased to see the firemen all dressed in their uniforms to present their vehicles this morning. I'm very pleased to have worked with the fire services. I'm the chair of that group, and very cooperative group. I want to bring that to everybody's attention. And their dual diligence in the last year. Very good. That's all I have to bring to the council this morning, Mayor Clark.
Councillor Inglis, thank you.
I always like to have an opportunity to babble for a couple minutes, and I think I'd like to do it in this section if I could. And if you'll allow me just a little bit of license, I want to take this moment to thank everybody that I've worked with here, you know, from the last council through to this one, and some pretty great staff that we've seen retire over the last number of years. And say what a wonderful opportunity it is to have public service. And in the course of 8 years with two councils, to reflect back on some of the challenges that we've gone through, including certainly the closure of the Bowater Mersey paper mill, the challenge of, and I know it's near to the mayor's heart, of getting the hospital accomplished, which again required leadership directly from Queens County. And, you know, when I came to council, I think it was very much perhaps an eyes open and eyes very surprised about what there was to do here. And I think the human condition leads us always to have things that we're interested in, and maybe we don't realize that other things are every bit as important. And this week, of course, under corporate services, Fire Prevention Week. And Raymond is correct, we're very lucky to have these guys here today. And I look back to a time maybe 6 years ago or so, when I found myself suddenly the corporate services chair, and that cooperation that Raymond speaks of today wasn't there. You know, you had a very small core group of dedicated fire people who were working on that. And one of my first memories of that was being at a meeting where there was an argument over whether or not we needed a ladder truck in Queens County. And it was really apropos because about 2 weeks later, I was at White Point delivering water to the site and watching two ladder trucks fight that fire, which sort of answered that question. So the leadership that's shown, and you always want to be able to give a little bit of credit when it's due, and I want to give a lot of it to Jennifer. Jennifer survived through the very tiring times with fire service through to the happier times that we have today. And the mayor, I know, will reflect that pretty quickly on, I gave him a little beating about how important it was going to be to have a fire hall completed in North Queens. And if you get out there now and see in a community that's really suffered a series of losses with its mill and with its loss of its banking institution, that's a gem, it's a jewel. If you wondered if it was going to be important and necessary, there was a fire that went on for about 3 weeks this summer that sort of proved that. And I want to give credit to Raymond Fisk, because Raymond wrestled that crown away from me about a year and a half or 2 years ago. And Raymond has full respect of and for the firefighters and the people that surround the fire halls. Very important stuff. And I want to say on a personal basis, I'm very, and I do it in the fire service because it sort of undermines it, I'm very thankful for the friendships that I'll take from this building. I'm going to miss being out here, but I'll make sure to call and give my comments on things to as many of you as I can.
You could join Councillor Cox and Councillor Robertson.
That's right. I may have a seat between the two of them. But what I really learned from it is something that, you know, and I'll draw a parallel. You know, Brian, who's not here with us today, may not understand, while I'll spend 15 hours every weekend to make sure there's a hockey game on Saturday night, and I may not understand why he arranges and takes part in vibe talks, but boy, they're all important. Everything that, all the building blocks that make our community, and for the small part I got to play here, I'm really grateful that I got to do it. I take friendships and tying back, you know, some of my very best friends in the world are from the fire service now, and they're people that I didn't know and who I can tell you when I first started didn't particularly like me. You know, so it goes to show that, you know, in tough times you can still do great things. And this council, of course, and it must be, and Darlene has changed councils many times. And I suspect that every time you have a certain suspicion when these new people, a new mayor comes in, but we took all the cards that we were dealt and we worked hard on them, and very proud to have been here with you folks. Very proud to walk out with Peter, another guy that I had no comprehension of who he was. Wish that he was here today, but I want to thank everybody. It was a real blast, and I know that you'll keep doing good work. And some of the things that the community berates, I know and can't always divulge how hard they're being worked on, and I know that many of them will come to pass. We still live in the best part of Canada, and I wish you all the best luck.
Thank you, Councillor Inglis. Councillor Fancy, Councillor Fisk.
I guess going along with Fire Week and having the fire trucks out here, we all can reflect back to when we first came into council. I can remember that first year, and we took our trip around, and we went out to Greenfield, and I know in particular, and we said, wow, this is going to be interesting, seeing all the fire trucks and everything that they had. And we realized what kind of problem we were in. We weren't going out to a so-called receptive, because there were needs, and the needs weren't being met. And so I like to think that that was one of those things where through strategy and being able to set things up properly, that now there is a cooperation, is as Councillor Fisk and Councillor Inglis has mentioned, that you can be able to talk to them, and even talking with Moyle this morning and talking about some of their gear, their suits they wear, they've updated, and it's things that were missing that are being met now, and so much better cooperation now that we're working with them.
Councilor Fisk.
Mayor Clark, I want to take this opportunity also to thank you. It was back a few years when North Queens Fire Association needed a new fire hall. And if it wasn't for yourself and the staff and our council, we started the ball rolling, and especially yourself, Mayor Clark. We put $375,000 up front for these people. That opened the doors to the governments to bring money forth to make that possible for Queens County and North Queens. I also want to thank Jennifer Keating for working so hard on that project. She spent hours and hours, and we have gone ahead, and I'm very proud of that. So thank you again.
Thank you. I'd just like to comment, if I may, about the three trucks being out there, just in, they're worth about $1 million. I'm talking to the fire chiefs. And that's huge, you know. I think that the program that we put in, and it was 2 cents on the tax rate, and that is a sort of a capital fund, was building a capital fund for replacing major equipment. You spoke of cooperation between the departments, and I think the thing which underlines that best is that the first department that was up for a new vehicle was Greenfield for a new fire truck, which they have. And Moyle told me it's about $400,000. The next department that was up was Port Medway. Port Medway gave up its slot to Liverpool, and it took Liverpool's rescue truck so that Liverpool could get a new pumper truck. I think I got the right term, Rafa?
Yeah, pumper
okay.
Tanker.
And so if that isn't cooperation,
so.
And I talked to Kendall, I've talked to him several times, but just again this morning, and he said, well, we could see that we really needed that rescue truck. Liverpool had a problem, so it just made sense to do it cooperatively. Mm-hmm. So I think that's huge, and I think we should all be proud of our firefighting service with that kind of attitude. And that, it's been a very impressive job, and well done. Of course, Councillor Inglis didn't say that I nearly choked when he took me out. I'd hardly even thought about running as mayor, and Councillor Inglis grabbed me by the ear. We went out to breakfast, and I had hardly got my first mouthful of egg in my mouth before I was out in the garage being told by David Lonis, well, we've only got 3/4 inch clearance here, so Bruce deserves a lot of credit and a lot of pushing and so on. Thank you all very much. Yes, Councilor McLeod.
I just want to make a comment, and I know we're complimenting and appreciating all of our fire departments. They came to our church service on Sunday morning, which was their annual parade to start off Fire Prevention Week, and it was a good attendance, and they were well recognized in that venue. But firefighters aren't just fighting fires anymore. They're a complete service of every need in our community. Emergency services, you know, when there's an accident, some of them are called. And climate change is causing them to be retrained and, you know, dealing with those issues. So firefighters isn't just fighting fires anymore.
And Port Medway, Jerry Stevens told me this morning that, and I saw them actually filling up for one of these. They had 2 fish ponds they had to look after that people had koi that are well worth. Apparently you can get fond of a koi. I'm not sure how you do that, but they had these ponds, and they, Port Medway went down, filled up their ponds a couple of times for them to save the fish. So they've done amazing jobs everywhere. So. Okay, shall we move on? Anybody have anything under engineering and works?